From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and it's another bonus episode, friends, and I am so excited for you guys to hear this one because this week we are marking the 6-year anniversary of the launch of The Sporkful podcast. We didn't do anything last year for, what is the 5-year anniversary? I'm going to call it the Spork anniversary. We didn't do anything. I totally forgot, and I almost felt like I had let the show down, as if the show was saying to me, like, Dan, you forgot our anniversary. So I made a point that this year we would do something special, 6-year anniversary, bonus show. I'm about to play for you the first ever episode of The Sporkful. You may not know that the show's been around for so long. I'm very fortunate and very honored to be at WNYC Studios now, but I did the show independently for a number of years before that. We have about 150 shows in deep freeze right now that are not publicly available, okay? They might someday become publicly available, but they aren't right now. However, we are reaching into that archive and pulling out one that most of you have never heard that we're going to play for you right now. And when the show first launched, I had a co-host. I did the show with my friend Mark Garrison, who I'd worked with at NPR, and he's now at Marketplace doing great work there, and we had a lot of fun. And the show back then was more about the two of us debating and arguing. So here it is. As it first aired, unaltered, the first ever episode of The Sporkful.
This is The Sporkful.
This is The Sporkful, where sacred cows get grilled. I'm Dan Pashman, along with my friend Mark Garrison.
Hey, Dan.
We're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. Mark Garrison, how are you, sir?
I am good. I had some kind of shrimp and vermicelli thing not too long before I got here that a friend of mine's mom bought for us, and there was some takeout. So that is, I am energized to have this conversation.
Sounds delicious.
It was, actually. Now, before we get started, we want to remind everyone that the conversation we are about to have continues online all the time. Check out thesporkful.com to find our blog, Twitter stream, Facebook fan page, email address, and more. You can basically tap directly into our brains, our stomachs, if you dare, by going to thesporkful.com.
That's right, Mark. And you know, one of the things we're going to talk a lot about on this show is food techniques in adverse circumstances. And one of the things that I put a lot of effort into is reheating foods in adverse circumstances. And this happened to me at work the other day. I had a half a Cuban sandwich to reheat. Now, you know, a Cuban sandwich is supposed to be served hot. Of course, you want the bread crispy. You want the inside, the meat and cheese to be hot and melty.
Yes.
In my office, though, we have a microwave and we have an old-fashioned pop-up toaster with a lever. We do not have a toaster oven.
Okay. So you have a problem with a leftover.
Right. How do you get the bread to be crispy and the inside to be hot and melty? If you microwave it, it's going to get soggy.
Soggy bread, yeah.
All right. But you can't stick the whole sandwich into the slot of the pop-up toaster. So what I did was, and I was very happy with this, I microwaved the sandwich for just about 20 seconds, all of it, including the bread.
Okay.
That heated the meat and melted the cheese.
Good.
Then I turned on the pop-up toaster. I pressed down the lever with nothing inside it. But that generated enough dry heat, and then I laid the sandwich on top of the slots,
so
across the top of
the bread down, and the image of this sounds kind of beautiful because you have this toaster, and then there's an open-faced sandwich sitting on top of it.
That's exactly right, and the heat came up, and it actually worked. It's the second time in my life that I was able to crisp bread for a sandwich by laying it on top of a pop-up toaster. As I'm watching the sandwich heat, I'm seeing the cheese get very melty, and a little bead of oil is starting to drip down the side of the bread. And I had this vision for a moment that the oil would drip down into the canyon, into the slot of the toaster.
It is a canyon, really.
Right, and somehow start a giant electrical fire and burn down my entire office. And I had this image that I'd be outside of my burnt down office building, and there's news vans and ambulances coming and people being escorted away by crying family members with blankets around their shoulders, and they're crying and they're all upset and being consoled. And I'm just digging through the charred wreckage of this awful disaster looking for my half a Cuban sandwich. It would just be such a tragedy if that happened, because I really wanted the other half of that sandwich.
Do not cry, though. We're gonna have a good conversation today. The topic for rumination and mastication is ice cubes. Now, let's talk about some general principles. The normal thing we're doing with ice, we're putting it in beverages to make them cold or to get them cold in the first place. Now, let's start with kind of like a fantasy ice scenario. Like if we are at a bar and the drinks are costing $10, $11, $12, and when the drinks get that expensive, you want to know that someone has put really hard, difficult effort into making these drinks and you don't feel like a total loser for paying all this money just for a cocktail. And basically, one thing I've seen a lot of bars doing lately is just like putting enormous care into their ice. The main thing that sets apart thoughtfulness in ice is considering the surface area of the ice and how fast it's going to melt.
Surface area to volume ratio.
Exactly.
That's all I remember from AP biology.
Okay, exactly.
And the reason why that's important in ice is because you want to chill the drink without having the ice melt too quickly, because you don't want the whole beverage to become watered down. Actually, in this case, you want a low surface area to volume ratio. The more surface area of the ice that is exposed to the beverage, the faster the ice will melt.
Yes.
So you want a big piece of ice with low surface area.
If it's something that you're trying to sip. Now, if you want to, if it's more like kind of like a summery, you know, fun cocktail or whatever, like, I don't know, a mojito or something like that, you're never going to see a mojito with a giant chunk of ice because you want it to kind of melt. But if it's like a, you know, like a sipping, first of all, for me, like if it's a sipping spirit, I'd rather just have it neat. But some people, they want some cold.
Sure.
So the way to get it for that is just have a giant piece of ice that you just drop in. I've seen some bars that make something that I just refer to as the meteor, because it's this giant round piece of ice that they just put in there. And it melts only enough to keep the drink cold, but it doesn't water it down.
Is the meteor a perfect sphere, or is it bumpy on the outside?
I've seen it. You know, I didn't pay that close attention, but you've obviously paid close attention.
Have.
You have something
and
to
Mark,
share.
And Mark, I'm very surprised you have not paid close attention. Well, because a perfect sphere would have lower surface area to volume ratio. If there are craters in the thing, then that increases the surface area.
Oh, okay, got it.
So the best possible ice, if you want something in the spherical realm, would be a perfect sphere.
Yes.
One thing I've seen is essentially a disc. That is the diameter, it's about, let's say, a half an inch high, and the entire diameter of the bottom of a rocks glass.
A puck of ice.
It essentially is a puck.
Okay.
That's a great way to describe it. And that works very well also. It stays frozen. It only melts a tiny bit, chills the beverage through, never waters it down too much.
No, because that's like the opposite of how a lot of bars make ice. Because a lot of bars, they always get that quick melting ice, so that they basically, they fill the glass with quick melting ice, then they pour the shot, and it looks like they're giving you this big shot, but it's only because the ice is melting so fast, and it looks like you're getting more whiskey than you actually are. So this is the opposite of the trick bartender fast melting ice, which is good. The other piece of ice that I thought was kind of cool was when they had, I've seen a thing that's shaped like a spear or a bolt of lightning or something like that, where if it's like a tall, like a tea glass or a Tom Collins glass, they just drop a spear in there.
One
it's
long
awesome.
Cylinder.
Yeah.
But you know what I just thought of when you're talking about what you call the spear is, I've never seen this, but this would be amazing. Well, actually, it might be a little bit too uncomfortable to use, but imagine an ice straw. Imagine that cylinder with a hole bored through the middle of it so that you could actually use it as a straw and drink through that.
Well, I have seen they have molds if you want to make shot glasses out of ice, and that's kind of a similar thing like that. But you get into the, like, you know, the tongue and lip on the flagpole issue that
that's
a Christmas
fair.
Story and everything like that. So I would advise against that.
What are your thoughts on hand cut?
I think it's just a way that bars can sound more pretentious and justify like spending even more and more on their drinks.
Yeah, it's a gimmick.
Yes, it's totally
because,
a gimmick.
Because one thing that's important in good ice is you want uniformity.
Yes.
I mean, if you don't have uniformity in your ice cubes, then you're basically saying that you have no fundamental shape that you're standing for. You have no philosophy. You're basically an ice nihilist at that point. And then you're going to charge me $12 for a drink?
Or more.
Yeah, or more, forget it.
It's Dan back here in the present, cutting in. We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, the discussion and debate on ice cubes will continue. We'll get beyond platonic ideals and talk about real-world ice shapes that you might actually be more likely to use and which are best and why. Also, Mark and I will throw down on the issue of iced coffee made with coffee ice cubes. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Quick reminder to sign up for our new and improved email mailing list, in which producer Ann Sandy and I will tell you what we're eating and what we're reading every week. So you'll get a lot of good information and fun information. Plus, you get reminded that there's a new podcast episode up. So everyone wins. Sign up now at sporkful.com/newsletter or text SPORKNEWS to 69866. Now let's get back to the first ever episode of the Sporkful podcast.
So that's ice in a perfect world, but let's talk a little more practically, because most people cannot make a sphere or meteor of ice in their home. So when people, with the things that most people have available in their house, what are the best ways to make ice? I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say that of the normal options, I would vote for bag ice.
I actually hate bag ice, and but it is okay.
What's wrong with bag ice?
It melts really fast. It's all screwy and
why does it melt fast? It depends on the shape,
surface area. You just talked about this. Well, when do you ever get bag ice? That's like, well, it's usually just like a big like thing of ice, and it's basically a bag ice is crushed ice, and a crushed ice is useful for some things, certain cocktails, but in general, you're ceding a sense of control. It's problematic.
And no, I get good bagged ice. You get bigger ice.
Where do you get good bagged ice? Do you have some like locavore ice producer?
I know a guy. Right?
Like that? Is it ice that fell off a truck? No, because then it melted. You lied. Everything is a lie.
No, I will say that bagged ice that has that that hole bored through the middle.
Yeah.
Is bad because that has too high of a surface area to volume ratio.
That's the quick melting ice. That's the trick ice.
Oh, I
agree
that's bad, but not all bag ice has that. You're painting with an awfully broad brush here, Mark.
Brush,
you can get a big,
a large pick,
thick ice cube that's basically the closest thing readily available to the sphere.
I guess I would say
in a bag.
I've never had a good experience with bag ice, except for the fact that it's a lot of ice and it's ready now. So if you're having a bunch of people over, that's what you're dealing with like that. Now, but let's say you're not having a bunch of people over, you don't have a need for a lot of ice right now. Given the choice, because I am generally not going to spend the extra 50 cents or a dollar on any given thing. I will get the cheapest item out there. But in the case of ice cube trays, instead of like the cheap plastic one, I actually have been convinced to trade up and spend like an extra dollar and get those like kind of wobbly silicone made things like that, because I didn't realize that you don't taste it. You kind of taste like a little plastic taste when you have like the cubes like that, and they're really easy to pop out and do like that. Because what I really hated of the regular normal plastic trays is like getting all the ice out.
Sure.
Doesn't always come out. It doesn't come out the right way. It has those weird little spindles on the side because it's never perfect like that. But these were like, because a friend, I was like, oh, how did you do this? Like, how did you have these perfect square cubes that taste fine? You know, and he had like this silicone ice tray. So I was like, that was when I was like, okay, I will spend an extra dollar to get this. And I've pretty much stuck with that.
Wow. I will look into that. Now, speaking of silicone, there's a lot of shapes out there. And I'm going to put a link up on the blog at thesporkful.com, unusual and creative ice cube trays. I found this article that's got 20 of them. Some of them are kind of clever, I guess. One of them is this set where you can get a bunch of ice cubes that are shaped like the Titanic and a bunch of ice cubes shaped like an iceberg. And you put one of each in the drink and you get it, the Titanic crashing into the iceberg.
I think that whole product would not exist if it were not for the existence of Urban Outfitters.
Yeah, they're the worst. If you can show me a cool, clever shape that is a high-quality ice cube that has a low surface area to volume ratio and all these other things we've been discussing, then I'm open to that. But if you're going to sacrifice quality to impress your friends
for gimmickry,
then yeah, your priorities are not in order.
Yeah, and honestly, that's only impressive like once, and you're gonna have to like live with having purchased this, and you're either gonna have to throw it away and feel stupid then, or you're gonna have to like keep using it.
I'm also a little concerned that this Titanic ice cube, if it breaks in half, could be a choking hazard.
Yeah. You've chosen your ice cube tray, but I want to get you to pour something that's not water into it. I want you to put coffee in there, because that is going to redeem the false promise of iced coffee. Coffee is, I mean, because again, like iced coffee, it's a lot like communism or the futon. I mean, big promises are made. Communism, like you're all going to be equal and happy, we'll never go hungry. Futon says, hey, you're going to save all this space by combining the couch with the bed. It's all a lie. You basically get bread lines and bad denim for communism, and you end up with a crappy couch and a crappy bed all in one if you go with a futon. Iced coffee is the same deal. They're like, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be really hot outside, but you're still going to enjoy coffee. It's going to be refreshing. You can sip it from a straw. It's really convenient. But the problem is, what you really get is watered down crappy coffee. And worse, they charge you more for it, even though it costs them less. They're basically selling you mostly water. No one adds water to coffee. But in iced coffee, we've just come to accept this, which is bad. So I'm going to say a true iced coffee must be made with coffee ice cubes. Otherwise, it's just a water coffee.
Well, that's out there, Mark, and that's an impressive thing to say.
Coffee will freeze. I've done it.
I'm sure that it will, and I don't doubt it. But here's my thing, is that a lot of beverages, including iced coffee and most cocktails made in bars, if the person making them knows what they're doing, they are designed with melting in mind. That's part of the process. It's part of the beverage. And good iced coffee should be made stronger than regular coffee to account for some melting. And if you're not taking that into account, then the person making it is at fault.
I'm saying if I am making an iced coffee in my house, I'm going to take full control. And I'm going to make sure that when the coffee melts, it's still coffee and it's still cold. You know, the idea of
the ice cubes black coffee?
They will be, yes.
And do you drink your iced coffee black?
I often do.
If you add milk or sugar and then you add black coffee ice cubes, now you're upsetting your ratio of milk and sugar to coffee.
No, that's coming later, though, because again, like when...
Those ice cubes are still going to melt. The black coffee ice cubes are going to melt into your milk
coffee. No. Because if I'm making iced coffee in my home, I've made the coffee already, put it into a pitcher, and it's already in the fridge. So it's cold, and then I'm just going to put the coffee ice cubes in it to keep it cold wherever I may go over a said period of time. If it's going to be iced coffee, it has to truly live up to its name and be coffee that will melt into more coffee.
Well, Mark, you want it to live up to its name. All right. Now, you know that I'm a lover of words. All right. Ice coffee means coffee with ice. Now, I've gone so far as to look up the definition of the word ice in the dictionary, and I have it here before me. And it says as follows: ice, noun, the solid form of water. I rest my case.
All right, you've made
an iced coffee has to have ice. Sorry,
I don't
buddy.
Want it. You're drinking ice coffee water is basically what you're drinking. You're living a lie. You're sipping a lie through your plastic straw.
No, if it was called frozen coffee or extremely cold coffee, then it would be the beverage you're describing. But iced coffee is iced coffee, and ice is made from frozen water.
All right, the semantic part aside, I will drink iced coffee how I call it. But if you insist, then I think you should choose frozen coffee, or wait, chilled coffee over what is commonly called iced coffee. Because it's just ice, what's commonly called iced coffee.
You're backtracking now. You're running scared, buddy.
I didn't know you had a Merriam-Webster at the ready.
I kept that in my back pocket to the very end. With that one. Well, that just about does it for today's podcast. You heard what we said.
All right, guys, Dan here back in the present. Hope that you enjoyed hearing that as much as I did. It was really kind of a fun walk down memory lane for me. And it's kind of cool hearing that first episode of The Sporkful because, on one hand, the show has changed and evolved so much in the 6 years since we've done it. And we're doing covering topics and having conversations with people that I never would have thought to do in those early days. And that's exciting on a creative level for me, and I think hopefully for you guys too, to hear new and different things happen with the show. But I also love listening to that because I think that you could in there hear a kernel of what the Sporkful was on day one that you can still hear today. This sort of obsessive approach to the most basic questions of food and eating that we started out with. And what's made the show so rewarding for me over these 6 years has been the fact that we put this show out there, threw it out into the interwebs, and didn't know what would happen, really. And we found you, and we found each other. And I want to say thank you for all your participation and your engagement over the years. That's really the most fulfilling part of what I do. Please remember to sign up for the Sporkful email newsletter at sporkful.com/newsletter or text SPORKNEWS to 69866. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Special thanks to Paula Schumann and to Mark Garrison. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Adam from East Meadow, New York, reminding you always to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.